Books with Aaron and Polly. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
Very.
I paused because I expected more introductions, but
I know, just but, you know, it's just the two of us today.
It you know, is.
We're all alone together with one another.
Aaron and Paul, Deadpool and Wolverine, very similar.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's very similar. Very similar. And just
who's
like
the
Deadpool,
Wolverine in this scenario?
I'm pretty sure it's you.
You think I'm Wolverine? Yeah, that makes you Deadpool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and, I could see that.
And just like Deadpool, we don't have a lot of vaginal sex. So.
Not on this podcast anymore. We're a comic book podcast. I think that comes with the territory.
That's right. That's right.
So I will ask our dear listeners to forgive my voice today. I can hear my voice is not great. I went to a concert last night, Aaron.
Oh, what'd you say?
I saw Creed.
Oh, nice.
Creed with Three Doors Down and Finger 11.
Oh, wow.
And so I saw it at the local amphitheater. Uh-huh. I don't know. You know, the amphitheater can probably fit 20-something thousand people.
Right.
Aaron, it was a sold-out concert.
Oh, that's great.
For Creed. I was shocked.
And so were you, like, just screaming at the top of your lungs the
entire
time?
Yeah. You, every word to every song. It's not like they've had a new one in 20 years, so I've had time to learn them.
Very nice.
No, it was a great show, but that's why you're dealing with this voice. But while I was at the show, you know, it's one of those things where you make plans and you go out and, like, the world happens while you're away. And, you know, because San Diego Comic-Con is this weekend, and there have been, you know, some minor or, you know, there's been some pretty decent news coming out of it, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I wouldn't say minor. I would say that the thing is,
Marvel stole the show, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because DC, they released their first trailer for their Creature Commandos.
Mm-hmm.
They
revealed the logo for DC Studios.
Yeah, revealed the logo for DC Studios. And, you know, then Marvel came out both Friday and Saturday nights.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it was Thursday and Saturday. Because Thursday night they had a screening of Deadpool and Wolverine in which they brought the whole cast out and spoiled like half of the cameos or half of the, you know, the people from the movie the night before. And then, you know, last night, as of this recording, we're recording this Sunday morning, the big news, the big panel,
huge
Marvel's
news.
Hall H panel.
Yeah. Sacred timeline shattering news.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So, first of all, they brought out Harrison Ford to talk about, they brought out the cast of Captain America, what is the new one called? It's New World Order.
Yes.
Brave New World, I think.
There you go.
So they brought them out. You know, apparently Harrison Ford did actually do the motion capture for Red Hulk.
Crazy. I cannot imagine him in the little suit.
Because he came out and he hulked out on stage. He did the whole, like, Hulk smash, like, roaring and everything. I was like, whoa, look at that.
Old-ass
man.
I never would have expected that from Harrison Ford.
They gave him money.
Harrison Ford is just such a guy, like, I'm going to act for you. I'm going to act in this box. I'm going to be right here in this box. This is what I'm going to do. This is what you're going to get. This is what I'm doing. And it just blows my mind that he would, you know, do the things that a Marvel movie requires.
Harrison Ford is the same age as is older than our president. And he's playing the Red Hulk and he's walking out on stage.
That's right.
Crazy to me how good Lily looks.
Yeah,
it's because he married a woman like 40 years younger than him.
Well, that'll do it to you. But, you know, that would put you into the grave. But, you know, I think it's all the weed he smokes. So
probably.
I think that marijuana has, life preserving qualities. Just saying. But, maybe that's what Biden ought to do. Maybe,
maybe he should have legalized it. And well, I mean, he kind of did.
Yeah. But you know, he just needs to toke up in the Oval Office. You know, get his burn on, you know, if you will.
Yeah.
And, you know, then do the debates. I mean, I think I could really get down with, Smoking Joe.
Smoking Joe.
Token Joe.
Token Joe.
Yeah.
Look at us. We're getting all political on this podcast.
All political.
But, so in addition to that, they also showed a brief bit of footage that has not been released officially outside of the panel of Fantastic Four. They had the Fantastic Car.
Have you seen the footage from Fantastic Four?
I've only seen screenshots of it, but I have not actually seen the footage.
Gotcha.
But, you know, Pedro Pascal has his mustache. He did not shave his mustache for the role of Mr. Fantastic. Just so you know, we're going to have a mustached Mr. Fantastic in this movie.
I don't know what I think about that.
Yeah, I don't know that I love that.
Yeah, they should have put makeup over it, like just like they did the Joker. Like
Cesar Romero.
Batman 66.
I'm sure that – I mean, with today's technology, you never know.
Yeah.
They could probably just remove it. But, you know, and then they had the Fantastic Car fly around. They had, you know, a brief shot of Galactus that they shared with the audience.
I loved the drone light show Galactus.
That was fantastic.
That was amazing. I was like, oh, my God. I mean, I just would have loved to have been there for that.
Really, DC should just be embarrassed they showed up at all.
Uh-huh.
Like
Marvel really came to play. I think Marvel came to San Diego this year with something to prove. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll talk about it here in a minute. But I think part of what they were proving was, hey, we've got a winner in theaters right now. You know,
yeah.
I think they came in cocky, and it was nice to see, you know, because they have been kind of they've had the stink of loser on them for a little while now. And I liked seeing the confidence, you know, I liked seeing them call their shots. I like going, you know, we are so badass. We're going to take the tentpole star of our franchise that we killed off in our biggest movie ever. We're going to bring him back and we're going to make him a different guy. I mean, that is a baller move. That is a baller move.
That was the huge thing, right? They brought out the Russos, you know, that the Russos are back to do both Avengers 5 and Avengers, 5 and 6.
So that's going to be called
Doomsday.
Oh, Doomsday. Okay.
Yeah, Doomsday and Secret Wars is still the title
of
the sixth one. And, you know, they would also be bringing on the writers that they worked with on previous films, like, you know, Captain America Civil War and...
the good ones.
You know, the good ones. They brought on the good writers. And, of course, like you said, they brought out Robert Downey Jr., who is now playing Victor Von Doom.
That is just insane.
It really is.
When I saw last night, because I was outside on the patio watching a movie, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. and when I came in, I checked my Instagram before going to bed, and I see, you know, Robert Downey Jr. In a Dr. Doom costume and having the mask off, and I'm like, I guess he's, you know, Marvel got him somehow to promote something. I'm like, what is this? And then I see it and he's actually going to play Dr. Doom. I mean, I just thought it was a gimmick. I was just, holy cow. Holy cow. That is huge. And I got to say, brilliant. I love it. I love it.
Because I'm on it, admittedly, because I love the character and the core concept of Victor Von Doom so much that turning him into a variant of Tony Stark. I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that they'll turn around my hesitation there.
I am too. The only other thing that I would have been satisfied with in a casting choice for Doctor Doom would have been Mads Mikkelsen. I mean, I feel like, you know, I had my heart set on Mads, but I'll take RDJ. I'll take that. I can do that. So I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm excited about just about everything I saw out of Marvel this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm also looking forward to Creature Commandos.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm also looking forward to DC's Creature Commandos. I think that looks pretty cool. But I do think
pretty cool.
DC, you know, really kind of crapped the bed in terms of their San Diego performance. And I get it. They don't have a lot in the can that they can show yet.
Yeah, but they do. That's my thing. They've been filming Superman. I mean, Lex Luthor is done filming.
Yeah.
They could have cut something together. I mean, Marvel has been filming Fantastic Four for maybe a month.
Right.
And they had footage. DC needed something to come out swinging because I think they're, you know, next year is probably when they'll do it. But they didn't show.
Yeah, I think they're saving it.
Yeah.
I think they're saving it for next year. I think they understand that they don't have really anything cooking over the next, you know, 6 to 12 months that's going to be in theaters. So why
the Penguin Show and the Creature Commandos, and that was it basically.
And who cares about the Penguin Show?
You know, I will watch it because I really like Colin Farrell.
Uh-huh.
And it looks pretty solid, but like I'm a little weird. I feel like I'm done with that Batman saga, uh-huh. that, you know, that Matt Reeves, like, uh-huh. it feels at this point like a distraction from just getting the DC show on the road.
Yeah. Well, and the only reason it hung around is it did well at the box office. You know, and, you know, so, you know, I think James Gunn would have been happy to walk away from it, to be perfectly honest. But I think Warner's was like, hey, you know, you got one property that's making money. Let's do that again.
Yeah. Like the second Joker movie. Yeah. Like, I don't need any of that stuff. I mean, will I watch it? Of course. I'm on a comic book podcast.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to watch it too, at least the first episode. But I can't guarantee. I did not like the Matt Reeves Batman movie.
I thought it was fine. The thing is, I thought it was fine. It was nothing new.
Exactly.
To me. And I love Matt Reeves. Uh-huh. You know, same. I'm a huge Matt Reeves fan. But like the film was just, you know, it was.
Yeah, it did absolutely nothing for me. And, you know, as much as I dislike Robert Pattinson, he was fine in it. Yeah. I just didn't. The movie didn't grab me. Not like, you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman. So anyway, I feel like James Gunn, who understands how San Diego works, did a calculation that, yeah, we're going to have kind of a nothing showing. But next year, you know, I think that's what he's waiting on. He's going to, you know, keep his ammunition and his powder dry. He's going to wait until next year, in which, you know, I think his intent is to own the con.
Yeah, so, that's going to be tough because next year, if Doomsday is coming out in May 2026, then next July, Marvel's really going to have a lot to show announce regarding that and that buildup.
Yep. But, you know, I thought Marvel had it going on. And that is fueled, of course, by Deadpool and Wolverine showing at a theater near you. Paul.
Yes, sir.
What did you think of Deadpool and Wolverine?
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved Deadpool and Wolverine. You know, and I've read some negative reviews. They're like, it's fine. It tries too hard. It's not funny. Uh-huh. You know, and I'm like, I disagree with all of that. I thought it was funny. Not every joke landed, but that's how Ryan Reynolds works.
Well, and that's how jokes work.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the complaint that I heard was, you know, the movie tried to be heartfelt. But, you know, with all the jokes on it, it was just too much noise to signal. Right. And I'm like, you know, what are you expecting from a Deadpool movie?
Yeah.
You know, this is the character. And by the way, I loved this. I think this is the best Marvel movie since Endgame. I'm trying to think of a movie I have enjoyed as much as
Good Marvel movie since Endgame has been No Way Home, frankly. Yeah.
Well, and didn't Guardians 3
come out? Oh, Guardians 3. Yeah, that's right. I always forget about Guardians 3.
I know. Well, because it feels like it should have taken place before Endgame, but, you know, it doesn't. But, you know, anyway, I think it's certainly one of the top movies since Endgame, and I think it might be the best. And here's my prediction, is that it breaks the box office. I think the movie is super enjoyable. I rewatched Deadpool's 1 and 2 prior to going to see this movie this weekend, and I only have one complaint. I loved just about everything in this movie. I loved the buddy copness mm-hmm. of Deadpool and Wolverine. That was exactly the tone this movie should have had. I loved the ridiculous fight scenes between the two of them because they can't kill each other. The opening credit scene where, you know, he digs up Wolverine's body thinking that he'd be alive down there in some way, shape or form. And then, you know, he's just got the adamantium skeleton and then kills the Time Variance Authority officers with the Wolverine
skeleton.
That was
amazing. That was an amazing open, especially because they're like, don't worry, we're not going to disrespect the end of Logan.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I loved the meta commentary. Disney, there's going to be a lot of this kind of thing, you know, brace yourselves. You know, I loved that sort of, you know, look at the camera about Disney itself and Kevin Feige in particular. You know, Kevin said we couldn't do cocaine. We absolutely cannot do cocaine. But don't you want cocaine? ass I want cocaine. I thought the movie was hysterical. I did find myself in a fairly crowded theater being the only one laughing at times because the joke density is so thick.
It is. And there's so much that, you know, I was talking to someone about the film after the fact, and I'm like, especially for younger viewers, I'm like, there's so many deep cuts.
Yeah, very. And those are the things that I found myself being the only one laughing at.
Yeah, like, I don't know that your average moviegoer is going to remember Jennifer Garner Electra or the whole Channing Tatum Gambit drama.
Yeah.
You know, there were things like that. I'm like, I don't know that, like if Jen and I went and saw it, I think she'd get some of it.
Right.
Like, Blade is obvious, you know, but, like, the Johnny Storm, Chris Evans, like, I don't know that that's ingrained enough in people's heads that they would have got, you know, that the Johnny Storm, Chris Evans thing lands with everyone. But for if you are a longtime comic book fan, you know, like us, it is very rewarding to revisit all of those characters.
Well, the scene where they are in the void. And, you know, the void is where you go when the TVA zaps you with their rods. You know, it always looks like you've been, you know, disintegrated, but you're actually being transported to the void, which we saw in Loki. Well, they get transported to the void. And, you know, in the background, you can see the 20th Century Fox Studios sign. I mean, just killing me. But there's this moment where Chris Evans appears in the film, and spoilers, by the way.
We probably should have warned. I mean, we're if you read the description before you listen to the podcast, you know this is a spoiler filled conversation.
So Chris Evans appears, and I mean, I'm overjoyed to see, you know, that Captain America is on, and, you know, Deadpool's like, he's going to say it. And just as you think he's going to say Avengers Assemble, he yells, "Flam on!" reminding us that his first role in a Marvel film was as Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. I thought that was brilliant, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it had me completely sucked in. I thought, you know, this is Captain America. You know, which would be the first time that we've seen him since Endgame. But no, keeping in tone with sort of a you know, farewell to the Fox properties under Marvel, we get to see Johnny Storm. I thought that was great, and I won't ruin the post-credit sequence.
But that was so good, though.
That was insane, you know, insane. Chris Evans saying those words, I was just... Oh my God. This movie was so enjoyable. And so let me get to the one complaint I have, Paul.
Okay.
The thing that I love about Deadpool's 1 and 2 is the relationship Deadpool has with his girlfriend, Vanessa. I love that relationship. You know, they are just so cut from the same cloth. They're perfect for one another. And this movie really moves her off to the side.
Yeah.
And shows that she's moved on because, you know, Deadpool has changed. And she's in the movie. It's nice to see Marina Baccarin. Is that her?
Marina Baccarin. Yeah.
It's nice to see her. I always, you know, I've enjoyed her since Firefly. It was nice to see her, but it's not the same thing. And that just bugged me that as important a character as she was in Deadpool's 1 and 2, she's such a minor, you know, just a motivational character.
Yeah.
In 3. And that's disappointing because at the end of Deadpool 2, he steals a time device and goes back and rolls back time and saves her life. So you just think you'd get to spend a little more time with her in this film, and you just don't get to spend anything meaningful at all. Last note, Dogpool, my favorite thing. Yeah, it might be my favorite thing.
Yes, I love Dogpool. I mean, everyone loved Dogpool.
Yeah, Dogpool's great. Dogpool's great. The, you know, Dogpool's got that lolling tongue out of his mouth like he's missing teeth or a jaw. And he is just licking Ryan Reynolds' face. I mean, just going to town like, you know, Reynolds is made out of ham. And the woman off to my left in the theater is making sounds like she's about to throw up. She's and that just made it even funnier to me. I heard reviews saying that, you know, this was not a successful film, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This movie was great. This movie was everything it needed to be. I think this movie's going to do huge business.
It already is. I mean, I think it's already breaking records. I mean, it's doing so well.
Well, and I think that it's got a lot of rewatchability. I mean, we heard from our very own Wayne, who saw it, I guess, Friday night or Thursday night. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to see it again before we record. I'm like, holy cow. You know, yeah. I think it's got that kind of rewatchability because the jokes are flying so fast and there is so much action in the movie that it's easy to miss stuff. I will say this is the first Marvel movie since Endgame that I didn't fall asleep in.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I even in my beloved Guardians of the Galaxy, I got drowsy in the third act. I stayed awake throughout this whole film. I really enjoyed this movie, and I'm not a big Deadpool guy.
I'm not in comics, but I think he's one of those characters that, you know, people just tries too hard, right? Yeah. I think, you know, because he's got to be constantly talking, constantly making jokes, right. And you know, like you said, not every joke lands, which is fine in a movie.
Right.
Not great in a
that's my thing. I find him tiresome in comic books. Really enjoy him on screen.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's got to do with Ryan Reynolds. I mean, there is a perfect pairing between, you know, actor and character there.
Agreed.
I don't know who else you could get to play Deadpool. You know,
I don't know that you bother anymore.
Yeah.
You know, like it's done.
Yep.
So I think the next Marvel movie lined up is Captain America Brave New World, which is coming February 2025.
It was nice to see that preview on the screen. You know, I've seen it, you know, on my iPad several times, but it was nice to see it on the screen. I think that looks pretty badass. I gotta say, I'm excited about that one too.
Me too.
I was surprised that they didn't, you know, this being the big Marvel event this summer, I was surprised we did not get a Disney Plus WandaVision, Agatha All Along, you know, series reminder because that's coming. I mean, like in the next month and a half, I think.
Yeah, I think it's coming closer to
Halloween. It's like September, Halloween. October.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Which, you know, is a month and a half.
Oh. Just saying, Paul. The year is moving faster than than I'm ready for.
So yeah, good stuff. But you know, Paul, this is a comic book podcast, and you know, I got caught up on some Dick Tracy this week.
Yeah,
and this will be the first of the Mad Cave Studios books that we talk about today. I think we're kind of an all Mad Cave Studios.
I mean, there were other releases this week, but you know, we wanted to get caught up with this Mad Cave Studios, which has been around for a little while, but you know, recently came into our purview because they've really gotten these rights to characters. This was a very retro week for me in you know, in that. You know, we're not talking about some of the other books, but I read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I read G.I. Joe, you know, Scarlet. Yeah. I read Flash Gordon, Gatchaman, Dick Tracy. Like, you know, it was like, this is just like these are, you know, some of the reasons I got into comics and you know, media, you know, geek media to begin with were some of these characters as a kid. And so, you know, the fact that Mad Cave Studios now has Flash Gordon, Defenders of the Earth, Gatchaman, you know, Dick Tracy, like they've got all these rights, and I'm like, wow, it's kind of crazy. And you know, you can tell they have plans for all of them because at the back of each book, it kind of shows here's the release schedule for all the books in the Flash Gordon universe, in the Gatchaman universe. So I'm digging what they're doing. But yeah, Dick Tracy, you know, issue 3 came out this week.
Mm-hmm.
And you got caught up, Aaron. I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on this Dick Tracy book.
I did. You know, first off, let me ask you, Paul, because, you know, we were provided preview copies, or review copies, I should say, for Dick Tracy. Let me ask you, Paul, did you read it in the Comixology app? Or did
No,
you,
I read the review
the copy. PDF.
Yeah.
So I got it in the Comixology app because, you know, I do enjoy me some guided view. And I wanted to support it because I really enjoyed issue one. And so I bought issues two and three. And this comment doesn't have anything to do with the quality of the book, rather the functionality of the guided view for Dick Tracy's books two and three. And it is the worst guided view experience I've ever had in my life. And I suspect that's because Mad Cave Studios, this is just a suspicion. I suspect it's because Mad Cave Studios didn't properly prep the files, because instead of it immediately snapping to frame as a regular guided view will, it didn't seem to know what to do. And I think it's because it is presented as like a full screen PDF. And so you've got these white bar borders on the left and right of the screen for the whole page, whereas in a typical guided view experience, you wouldn't see that. And so I feel like maybe there was some prep to the digital file that didn't occur. But that was true of all the Mad Cave books I read this week, which made it super frustrating. That said, it did not detract from my enjoyment of these books. I really am enjoying this Dick Tracy story. Most of my Dick Tracy experience is from reading the dailies back in the day.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of enjoying this reboot. I like that we've kept it in time, you know, that we're not trying to make it a modern Dick Tracy, because I just don't think this is a character that works in modern day. But I, you know, so it's a post-World War II Dick Tracy. I love how quickly his group is coming together and, you know, how just despicably violent the book is on the part of the bad guys.
Yeah. I was surprised at the level of violence in the book, honestly.
And killing off some named characters.
Yeah, early that surprised on. I'm me
like,
too.
I'm like, wow, okay. So, you know, R.I.P. Mumbles.
Yeah. And Shoulders.
Know? Yeah, you know, sorry, Shoulders, about that. And, you know, I kind of like Shoulders. I mean, as a bad guy goes, he doesn't seem like such a bad guy. And that, you know, and Collateral Damage, you know, Shoulders' girlfriend gets cut down too. And I mean, it is just shocking how violent the book is. I think it's really well drawn. I like the look of it. I like the feel of it. Alex Segura, who is, you know, formerly of DC Comics back in the day, is co-writing the book with a fellow by the name of Michael Morici, with art by Geraldo Borges, I think. Anyway, I think it's a really well put together book. I'm digging it a lot.
I do too. You know, it is unexpected. And I think that's one of the things that I like about it is, you know, to your point, like characters. Now, if you're new to Dick Tracy, then these characters don't mean anything to you. But like some of the characters they've killed off, I mean, really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of violence really surprised me, but not in the way that it like it felt gratuitous or ugly. It just was like, whoa, OK, this book is playing for keeps.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the stakes are high. It's, you know, a lot of times you think of Dick Tracy and you're thinking, oh, okay, you know, it's going to be 1950s era, you know, everything's kind of safe bad, right? Yeah. And that is not the case here. I mean, this is like Dick Tracy meets Scarface. It is very, very violent. The stakes are really high. And I like that Dick Tracy just isn't the square-jawed hero. He's got some trauma he's dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, we see him frequently fall into flashbacks to World War II and the horrors of war. We see a lot of these characters shaped by their experience in the war. And, you know, I don't know that that's anything I've ever seen in Dick Tracy before. You know, you're a much bigger Dick Tracy aficionado than I am, but I'm really really very much enjoying, you know, exploring Dick Tracy, exploring his group of allies, like, you know, Tess Trueheart, and what, Pat Pattinson.
Yeah.
I'm getting a kick out of this. I like it a lot.
Me too. And, you know, I think it's a 5-issue series, if I recall. So I'm kind of curious, you know, if they're going to set up for more, you know, maybe they're going to wait and see how the book does, but yeah, it's 5 issues. So I guess we'll see, but I'm definitely on board with this interpretation of Dick Tracy.
Yeah.
Well, and another book that's surprised me, and I will say that's something that I have mostly positive feelings about all the Mad Cave books. And I really genuinely was surprised at the story that they went for in Flash Gordon number one. You know, and so there was a Flash Gordon free comic book day issue that leads into this that was free. You can get it on the Mad Cave Studios website. It might actually be on Comixology. I don't know. But you can read it for free online, and it very much sets up the status quo as we have it. Not the status quo, but like what's going on at the start of Flash Gordon number one, which is that Flash has, you know, in a battle with Ming the Merciless, disabled one of his machines. And what ended up happening is that Mongo was destroyed when the machine blew up. And so this is kind of what comes after that.
So we find Flash Gordon being held prisoner on a death planet. You know, it's kind of like the planet for execution. But they don't necessarily execute you, but you have to follow the rules. And if you don't follow the rules, you don't get to eat. And so what they do is that they keep you immobilized on a table, and, you know, at certain periods, you know, certain set times, the robot comes in and injects you with nutrients. And if you struggle, get to be a problem, you just don't get your injection and you wither and die. So it's a little rough.
Yeah.
You know, Flash seems like he's seen better days in this. And so it did not have the what I would characterize as a Flash Gordon-esque tone. You know, generally you get this, you know, sort of, you know, pulp swashbuckling sort of feel in a Flash Gordon book. And, you know, this was certainly a departure from what we're seeing in the current Flash Gordon dailies, which I read online from.
They actually promote them at the end of this book.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. I get from them on Comics Kingdom. Yeah, Comics Kingdom. Read them every day. I love it. Love the Flash Gordon daily comic strips. But this is a big departure from that. It's a lot more gritty and bloody and violent and scary. I really appreciated the monster sequence in this story. The, you know, big tentacled vagina faced beast that comes out. it was pretty extreme. I'm curious as to what's, you know, there's a reveal at the end of the book, which I will not spoil. I'm curious as to what all that means. But it is a nice, you know, primer for the ongoing story. And it hooked me. I'm in for the next issue.
The only thing that I'll say that I have one. I don't want to call it a negative comment so much as a concern, is that between Flash Gordon, and they also feature a preview at the end of the book of the upcoming Defenders of the Earth series, written by Dan DiDio, art by Jim Calafiore. And my concern after reading that is that both books seem to be so deathly serious.
And
Dick Tracy is too. And I'm a little concerned that there won't be any fun.
And that's the thing. That's what was startling to me about this book, is that it didn't have any of the whimsy that you expect with Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
But you know, it is just the first issue.
It is. They're both first issues. They're both establishing things. So I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Because I do think that, especially in these characters, you have to bring in a little bit of that joy, a little bit of that wonder and that fun and that whimsy, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise it's just sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not what you want from your pulp heroes. You want pulp action.
That's right. Well, and you know, you want them. Yeah. You want your hero like an Errol Flynn, you know, somebody who can kick the bad guy in the teeth with, you know, a laugh and a smile. you know, that's what I'm looking for. And hopefully we get to that in the next issue. So,
you know, one of the things that Mad Cave did that's actually pretty cool is they collected the Defenders of the Earth trade series from Marvel Comics, which I had totally forgotten existed.
Yeah.
And it was written by Stan Lee.
Yep.
As well, with Bob Harris and Michael Higgins. And I had totally forgotten this book existed. And so, but they've collected it.
Did you pick it up this week?
I did. I have not read it.
I have not read it either, but I picked it up as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking forward to reading it. I was like, wow, that's been a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah,
I'm curious if Mad Cave now has, because I, you know, rights are such a funny thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious if Mad Cave in this deal also has the rights to do Phantom. Or
I think
only
so.
Phantom in the context of Defenders of the Earth. Because I'm pretty sure, you know, some of those some of those rights rules are a little funky, especially around the Phantom.
Yeah, you're right. Because I think there's actually a current book in production of the Phantom.
Mm-hmm.
And there is certainly Comics Kingdom is doing a Phantom daily strip of the Phantom, which is, by the way, one of the worst daily strips I've ever read. That nothing happens in the Phantom comic strip. It's wildly frustrating. It's a lot of talking about things that might happen, could happen, have happened before, but it's never, you know, in media res. It is very frustrating. And that is me having read that comic strip for more than a year now. And I'm just like, when is something going to happen? Whereas, I mean, the economy of storytelling in the Flash Gordon strip is lightning paced. I mean, something happens every day in that comic strip. And, you know, just this little 4 or 5 panel comic strip stuff is happening. It's crazy. Just saying.
Comics Kingdom, check it out. But yeah, Flash Gordon and Dick Tracy both really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Now Gatchaman came out also, which, you know, for anyone who remembers Battle of the Planets. was what it was called, you know, in the US.
And important to note is that those stories and characters were different. It was the same visuals, but they did not just translate those episodes. So if you're coming to Gatchaman, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, if you're coming to Gatchaman with your Battle of the Planet sensibilities, you're going to be confused. Because, for instance, I know this one character as Keop from Battle of the Planets. Need help. That was Keop. And that is not his name here. He is the Swallow, I think. Yeah. In this book, so it's very different. It is a continuation of the original Gatchaman stories. So it's that continuity, not the Battle of the Planets continuity. So just FYI, don't be confused, because I sat there going, now wait a minute, what's going on here?
Well, and this book, you know, because I also read the it wasn't a Free Comic Book Day issue, but I think there was an issue zero, maybe. Yes.
And it was I think Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, maybe. But you know, the cool thing, so Gatchaman, whatever, is, you know, just like, you know, Flash Gordon is going to have its own thing with Flash Gordon and Defenders of the Earth, Gatchaman has 3 books, and all 3 of them are previewed in that Free Comic Book Day book. So there's going to be Gatchaman, there's going to be one-shot specials, and then there's going to be a Galactor miniseries. And, you know, at the end of the books, they have, like, the publishing schedule, which I appreciate. You know, what's funny is Gatchaman issue 2, I feel like Gatchaman issue 1 just came out. Maybe it came out back in June. I don't know. And we just didn't talk about it. I don't know. The schedule seems off to me already. But what do you think of this book, Aaron? You know, I think you certainly bigger Battle of the Planets person than I am, than I was. I was familiar with it, but don't really remember anything about it. You know, I remember these characters in visual only, so this story was all new to me.
Yeah. I was confused. It took me a little bit to sort it out that, oh, this isn't following up to Battle of the Planets. And, you know, I mean, it has been 40 years since I've watched an episode of Battle of the Planets, so, you know, it's been a while. But once I sort of released my expectations, I enjoyed the book a lot more. It does feel, and you know, it is it is remaining within the confines of children's entertainment television. You know, so some of the storytelling is a little bit more simple. You know, I felt like some things that I think something that was written for more of a Western middle-aged guy sensibility would have updated. That didn't happen here. This just feels very much of a time. It feels like this could have been written in the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. Unlike the other two, right? Unlike Freshman and Dick Tracy, which are still set within their time period, but modernized in the storytelling. This was very much told in a, you know, like if I had, like you said, if little Paul had picked this up at the comic shop when he was, you know, back in 1984 or something like that, it would have read and honestly probably even looked very similar.
Right.
You know, it very much is in the style of the animated show. And the writing is very classic style, you know, lots of exposition, you know, lots of word balloons, you know, more than your modern comic really.
Yeah. I think the one element that read as perhaps a bit more modern was the depiction, characterization, and writing of the backup team.
Yeah,
all of that read very, you know, post 2000 to me.
Maybe that's the point, right? Maybe the point is about the new guard coming in and modernizing it.
Yeah, but the writing didn't grab me, but the visuals did. I really enjoyed seeing the characters, the, you know, G-Force characters jumping into action and fighting and doing their thing. And it was very amused because this is what they would always do on the show. You know, when it's time for them to all, you know, stop fighting and throwing fists and whatnot and, you know, unite to become the what they call in the book, the Phoenix, the God Phoenix. Right. They all jump on their individual vehicles, you know, their motorbikes, what have you, their race car, jet plane, and then they all hook back up in their, you know, big team fighting jet. But it's this very team sort of, you know, action montage, and they do it in the comic, and it just cracks me up. I think it's hilarious. I think it's ridiculous and charming all at the same time. I was always fascinated by their big jet aircraft thing. You know, the Phoenix or whatever they call their aircraft always looked like so much fun. I always wanted a model of that to play with. I dug it. I'm not as crazy about this book as I am the Flash Gordon and the Dick Tracy book, but I did have a really good time reading this.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't know that I enjoyed it enough to continue with it, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I will definitely continue with Dick Tracy and Flash Gordon. This book it was fine, but it wasn't quite enough to bring me in as something I want to read regularly.
Yeah. I'm really curious about, you know, the backup has, you know, Galaxy of Madness with Michael Avon Oeming on the
art.
Kind of really curious about this, you know, because it seems to be in the same universe. You know, I really like what Mad Cave is doing. I think it's
And they have a 10-year thing on the, you know, on the cover of the book. I'm like, this company has been around 10 years, but like. Uh-huh. Something happened in the last year that really, you know, they started getting these rights and these major creators like Michael Avon Oeming. I mean, good on them because, you know, they're doing right by these characters. And the fact that they even started publishing some of that classic stuff like the Defenders of the Earth, like, great. You know, they're doing it right. And I think it's in the Flash Gordon book, maybe. Or maybe it was in the Free Comic Book Day one. But they're also really hyping every iteration of the character. So you've got the comics the daily comic strips, but also they're advertising the toy lines as well. And I think that's great. You know, I think they're really doing a good job with,
you know, we
with
call that
promoting problem. These characters.
We call that synergy.
Synergy.
That's what we call that. I'm really digging it. I'm in for issue two of Gatchaman. I'm also I really am curious about the, like, you know, they've got the individual character books. I want to check those out. I really enjoyed, and I know it's scratching that nostalgic itch. I used to race home after school to watch Battle of the Planets. And this isn't Battle of the Planets by any stretch of the imagination, but it is the you know, Gotcha Man stories on which Battle of the Planets was retooled for. I am totally in for issue two, and I'm in for issue two of Flash Gordon and issue four of Dick Tracy.
Yep.
I think Mad Cave Studios is doing a great job with these properties. It's a Mad Cave. I'm really digging this, and you know, it just reminds me that, you know, there are other comic companies other than just DC Comics and Marvel. We have enjoyed a lot out of AWA Studios this year, and it's nice to mm-hmm. see great stuff coming out of Mad Cave.
Well, and the one thing I want to say for people who read comics digitally, it's Comixology really needs a little bit of a revamp, I would say, of their website. And I say that because, you know, they have filters by comic company, by publisher. And that's, I typically use those because I don't want all the hentai.
Yeah, it's all the manga that's in
all
there.
The manga.
I mean, that is what makes me filter by publishers, because otherwise, I mean, it is an onslaught of manga books.
But you really can't without, you know, but Mad Cave is not one of the companies.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a little bit of a frustration for me that, you know, like, just put all publishers. Like, you, it's a database.
Yeah.
You should be able to put all options available in that field in your database as filters, and not just the companies who pay to be there.
I think that's exactly what it is. I think that companies are paying to be there, because, like, you know, every now and again you'll see Titan pop up there. But, you know, when Comixology first ruined the website, I remember reaching out to AWA Studios going, how in the hell do I find your books? Because I'm not finding them on New Comic Book Day. And so the guy said, well, like, search on the name. And I'm like, you mean by the filter? And he says, no, you have to punch it in, like, search on AWA Studios and then sort by, you know, recent. And, you know, that worked. But, you know, I have to remember to do that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I spent a ridiculous amount of money on comics this week. I bought everything from Mad Cave Studios, even though we're provided press copies. I bought the Defenders of the Earth book. I bought a bunch of, you know, Marvel DC stuff as well. And I bought some AWA Studios and other books. Let's keep this quiet so the wife didn't hear it. I think I spent $70 on new comics this week.
Dang.
I know, right? It's crazy town. But I wish the company from which I bought, you know, that distributes the books, right, you know, that Amazon, made it easier on me to find the good stuff. It's frustrating that they don't. And there's no, to your point, there's no good reason that they don't have a better filtering function.
Agreed. There, it's again, from a, it, like you said, it's a database. It's not that hard.
Yeah.
It's a choice, and it's a choice that I disagree with, frankly.
Yeah. Same. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week, so next Wednesday, or this coming Wednesday, is July 31st, which is, you know, obviously we're dealing with a fifth week here in the realm of comics. So limited releases from DC, but Marvel is taking advantage. So for Marvel, we have X-Force, number one, you know, from the new From the Ashes, you know, X-Men books. X-Force number one is coming out. We also have the seventh issue of Ultimate Spider-Man coming out, the final issue of Blood Hunt, issue 5, as well as some associated tie-ins, the final issue of Annihilation 2099, issue 5 as well, which apparently is setting up, I think it was revealed at San Diego Comic-Con, that it is setting up another Annihilation or some, you know, some type of 2099 event book.
Good.
So looking forward to that. And also for Marvel, What If Donald Duck Became Wolverine?
No.
It comes out next week as
because
well.
Because you demanded it.
So lots of big releases. Yeah. I'm gonna try to get caught up on Annihilation 2099. I've only read the first issue, but I liked it. So I want to get caught up in time for the fifth issue next week.
Very good.
And Aaron, you need to get caught up on Blood Hunt. Because it's the event of the year.
Never going to happen, my friend.
I will tell you, apparently, word on the street is that it's setting up for this big Doctor Doom event to come in the
Marvel books. the one nation under Doom or one world under
Doom. Yeah, is set up. And I could see the setup happening in Blood Hunt. You know, he's very much present in that story.
I carp about it for fun on the show, but when it's collected, I will absolutely read Blood Hunt.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just
no point in getting caught up on the single issues now. But even though it had the worst, solicitation. Whew, man, that was bad.
Yeah.
But hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books, what you thought about Deadpool and Wolverine. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or X.
Well, what a deal. Paul, it was great chatting with you today. Great talking about Mad Cave Studio books and getting caught up about San Diego and all of the Deadpool Wolverine goodness.
So much news this week. So
much.
All right. Well, we will do it all again next week.
You have a good one.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.